Thanks for listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. We're hearing several interviews from our southeastern Utah correspondent, John Kovach, for the program today. Very interesting and important topic, the fight for Native American voting rights in San Juan County in southeastern Utah. And you can join this conversation. We'll get your comment in at the next break, the end of the program. You can join us at Utah Public Radio. On a line at our email is upraxcess@gmail.com. Phone number is 1-800-826-1495.
Phil Lyman is also a current San Juan commissioner and works as an accountant in Blanding. Phil is a member of Blanding's most prominent family. Walter C. Lyman, who was a Mormon missionary, is regarded as the founder of Blanding. Phil made recent headlines when he sort of reluctantly led an illegal ATV ride into artifact-filled Recapture Canyon to protest a road closure. I caught up with him at his accounting office in downtown Blanding.
I really value the San Juan County's unique situation of being 50% Native American, and especially with the Navajo. I've worked with different individuals on the Utah Navajo Trust Fund for years. I felt like, and when I ran for commission, I made the statement to the Republican group in Monticello that until we recognize what the Navajo culture has to offer, we're going to be living below our potential in San Juan County. So there's an initial suspicion, and I see it. I read the things that the commissioners are so racist or anti-Navajo, different things like that, and I'm thinking, I don't know where that comes from. I know it's something we don't often recognize in ourselves, so I take it at face value, I read it. But in my heart, I'm saying I'm not afraid of Navajo commissioners. I would be thrilled to be in a county where there was more representation from Navajos, a stronger voice from Navajos. So that part of it didn't resonate with me that somehow the county was deliberately trying to exclude people. When they brought the lawsuit, the districts that they had proposed divided Blanding into three separate districts, which I didn't think that was fair. I felt like the Voting Rights Act says you don't separate communities of interest, and to me Blanding is kind of a community of interest, and Voting Rights Act says you can't gerrymander according to race. And they feel like we've gerrymandered according to race, but then they take it and they reverse gerrymander according to race, create one district that's 5% Native American and the other two that have a predominance. So I think somewhere in there's probably a happy medium, a happy balance.
What would be the best case scenario for reaching that happy balance? Some kind of settlement out of court, or how do you see it playing out ideally?
In my mind, ideally would be that we do away with the districts and go back to an at-large vote. The Native Americans have more than 50% of the population. Potentially, you could end up with three Navajo commissioners. I know that they say in minority situations, they don't expect to see voter turnout as high as it is in the majority population. And I'm sure that's the case. We're doing some things at the county level to try to help that, fix that. We're going to a mail-in ballot this year, which I think is gonna get a lot more participation from people who have a hard time getting to the polls and things like that. So ideally in my mind is that we would stop talking about race and have an at-large vote and one man, one vote. May the best candidates win and let the Navajo feel like they're being included in that. I would never want to exclude them from that, and like I say, I value their culture and their leadership, and I think we're lacking that in San Juan County.
It was some years back when the county first got in court over this issue. At that time, it was decided that the at-large was the problem, and in fact, that's typical. Right. You'd see these suits all over the country.
So as a county, we're pretty unique. I don't know of any county, there's not another county in Utah that has a federal district mandate on them. And again, we're unique because we're the only county that has a majority Native American population. The arguments against an at-large vote start to lose their meaning in San Juan County. Yeah. The tipping point would be when voter participation, increases among the Native Americans. You know, 30 years ago or 40 years ago when this was brought down, there were a lot fewer Native Americans that could read English. They were at a disadvantage. I don't think we have that same situation now. I don't know. These lines that we draw along racial lines, at some point, we've got to be able to move past that. Whether it's realistic to think it's going to happen soon, I don't know.
There was actually a university study done on the feasibility of just splitting into San Juan into two counties. Is that considered an idea that was dead on arrival, or is that still something that people think of as a viable possibility?
It was determined at the state level and at the federal level that the southern county lacked the tax base to support itself. The real dilemma there is not that they don't have the taxes, because they do. They've got the centrally assessed properties. The oil fields and those things are on the southern end of the county. The problem is it's all centrally assessed and it's pretty volatile. So you don't have the stable property tax base that the northern end of the county would have. But if we were to divide it today on the boundaries that I had seen proposed back in the report that was done, the southern county would have more property tax revenue than the northern county. Mm. And there's another interesting thing. If you had a southern county, from my understanding and from my reading, under treaty, because it's a Native American county, the federal government would be obligated to provide a courthouse, jail facilities, some of those other infrastructure things that would come from the federal dollar instead of from the county dollar. And if you look at the rest of the Navajo Nation, the schools are well funded. They have access to funds that we don't have access to in San Juan County. So I'm not a proponent of splitting the county, because I think it'd be kind of a step backwards, I guess, in terms of the social interaction that we should be able to accomplish. But by the same token, if you have two sides of a county that want to be separated, I think it would be viable. I think it would work for both sides, and the northern county would probably be the one that would struggle financially more than the southern county.
You hear sometimes the sentiment that they aren't paying their per capita share, their freight on a lot of county services. Is that a legitimate issue?
Yeah, I've heard that. If you're not paying property taxes, you don't have a vote, and that argument has. It doesn't hold water for me, because if, you know, people that rent aren't paying property taxes, they still have a vote. We live in a system where we have one man, one vote. They're citizens of the county, and their vote counts as much as any other person in the county, regardless of land holdings and things like that. By the same token, I think it takes some sensitivity on both sides to recognize that there are people that for whom property taxes is a pretty significant burden. I guess in my world, doing business here in my office and things, I have nothing but positive interaction with people, regardless of what their background or their race is. But yeah, you get into the political realm and you see a lot of anger that comes out. And again, I look at the history and I can see the injustices that have happened over the years. I recognize that when my ancestors came to this area, there were people here already. It's a beautiful area. I'm glad I live here. I'm glad that my ancestors were permitted and they were welcomed. Since then, the county's grown and the pressures have grown. And
if it comes down the line that we ever get to a point where we did have two Indians on the county council, are there a lot of people who think that would be some kind of disaster or calamity?
Well, you're asking about, you know, people's fears, and yeah, the people have certain fears, rational or irrational. In my mind, I would have a lot of trust in people that are elected. In Blanding, I think it's working. I think Blanding is a better town because of the diversity and because of the different cultures. Not that it doesn't come with some amount of conflict and strain occasionally, but my own feeling is we're better off for it. You know, do I think there's equity? No, I think there's still a tremendous amount of inequality.
Phil Lyman, one of the two white members on the current three-member board of San Juan County Commissioners.
You're listening to Access Utah, and our interviewer for the program today was our Southeastern Utah correspondent, John Kobosch. Thank you so much for those reports on this very important topic, Native American voting rights in San Juan County in Southeastern Utah. Our thanks to Ken Slate, Steve Bowes, Mark Maryboy, and Phil Lyman for sitting down with us for those interviews, and our thanks to John Kobosch. You can comment on this issue at our website, upr.org, or upraccess@gmail.com. We're on Twitter as well, at Utah Public Radio. Coming up tomorrow, we hope you join us for another episode in the ongoing series, Climate One, the latest on climate change. That's tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. StoryCorps is next, and Zesty Garden follows with Brian Earle.
Utah Public Radio presents StoryCorps, an oral history project in conjunction with the National Library of Congress, recorded in May of 2013 in St. George. Through a partnership with Dixie Regional Medical Center, 52-year-old Liz Cummings and her 23-year-old daughter Samantha came to StoryCorps to remember their husband and father, Tim Cummings.
Tim and I started our family in Laguna Niguel, California. And we had all eight children in California. And we moved to St. George when our youngest was only about a month old. Tim's business was very successful, and he was able to do a lot of community projects, community plays. He was the life of the party. And it was August of 2008. He was diagnosed with stage 4 colon cancer. We went ahead and started with chemo, but at one point he was hospitalized for 2.5 months straight, and I slept there every single night with him and would come home in the morning and get the kids to school and then come back during the day. The nurses were so amazing about just the number of children we had. You know, when you have eight people enter a room, it can be a little overwhelming, and the kids that were in college could come and do their homework in the room and plug in their computers and just be there.
The colon cancer he was diagnosed with was really rapid, so we weren't sure how much time he would have. And at the time, I was a full-time student at Dixie State. I was working full-time, so in between school, night school, and full-time working, I would go straight to the hospital and be with my dad as much as I could. I remember he would constantly be sick and throwing up, and he would still go to chemotherapy in a button-up shirt, his slacks, and he would have a belt on, and his hair was done. Mm-hmm. He always looked so sharp, even going to chemotherapy. And my dad was a magician. He always had a deck of cards, and he was famous for doing card tricks in his hospital bed or at chemo for the nurses. And they would be injecting him, and he said, pick a card, and they would just laugh. And it was just such a positive, happy experience. And I remember it was probably near the end, and it dawned on me how sick my dad was. I was thinking I had, the worst day ever. And so I came home, and I look up, and my dad's on the end of his bed, and he has his little barf bag, and he is just throwing up and feeling so sick. And my dad was a big man. Dad was about 6'1", 6'2"-ish. He was a big, tall man. And when he died, he weighed about 130 pounds. And he looks up at me after, in between throwing up. He goes, "Hi, sweetheart. How was your day?" And just still upbeat. And I said, "So are you feeling better or are you feeling worse?" He looked down at the floor and he looked up at me and he said, "Honey, I'm dying. It's my time to go." My first reaction was anger, and "You're just gonna give up." And he looked at me and said, "Honey, everything that could have gone right has gone wrong. You know,
it's my time.
It's my time. I believe that God wants me in heaven and it's my time to go. And so I hugged my dad and we had a long talk. This was our last real long talk. And, you know, I'll always be grateful for that time we had. It made me realize how fragile life is and how grateful I need to be for just every day.
I just think that it makes you more appreciative to life and everyone around you and how grateful you are for the things that you have.
These interviews were recorded at StoryCorps, a national initiative to record and collect stories of everyday people. Excerpts were selected and produced by Utah Public Radio. Support for StoryCorps on Utah Public Radio comes from Dixie Regional Medical Center, located on two campuses in St. George, serving northwestern Arizona, southeastern Nevada, and southern Utah. Information at dixieregional.org.
Access Utah is a production of Utah Public Radio. You can listen to this episode or previous episodes of Access Utah anytime at upr.org, where you can find a link to subscribe to our podcast. This is Utah Public Radio, KUSR HD1 Logan, KUSK HD1 Vernal, KUSL HD1 Richfield, KUST HD1 Moab, KCEU Price, and KUSU FM HD1 Logan.